The next case is number 03-1170, Manu Patel against the City of Chicago. Mr. Chapman.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
Ms. Layton, counsel, may it please the court. As Your Honors know, this is an appeal from the dismissal by Judge Anderson of our claim of equal protection rights violation on the grounds that the claim is not ripe for disposition. We have approached the case both from the way that Judge Anderson dismissed the case without prejudice, holding that we could never be ripe unless and until the city sought to actually start condemnation proceedings against our property.
Could you explain something just from the start? I'm not familiar with this area. What is it? There are a number of motels.
Right, Your Honor.
People refer to them as some transient, and I don't exactly understand what's the real issue here
about these
motels.
The real issue, you'll have to ask Alderman O'Connor. For the last 20 years, 8 of the 11 motels are located in the 40th Ward. I don't know how familiar Your Honor is with the north side of Chicago, starting about Foster Avenue, going along Lincoln Avenue up to almost Devon. There are 11 motels. Some of our owners are seated in the back, Your Honor. For several years, Alderman O'Connor had sought to put the motels out of business. As late as 1989, he sought legislation which would have downzoned them out of business. The city backed off of that, and we've alleged in our cases he simply doesn't like them. In the press release, which we've attached as an exhibit to an affidavit in opposition to the motion of the Smiths, he takes the position that these motels are hotbeds of vice, corruption, etc., that they are a blight in the community and have caused this entire area, a mile and a half in length with 400 parcels and 200 buildings, is causing this community not to expand. We take the position, as we've shown with our papers, that we simply, that this is not the truth, that this is a personal vendetta, and Alderman O'Connor has been able to convince the city to move ahead with this, and that's the only reason that of all the parcels and properties in this TIF, the originating ordinance listed only the motels for acquisition, and to date, that is exactly what is happening.
You appended to your reply brief a letter dated July 9th from Ms. Beauchamp, and I wonder, and
she pronounces, yes, Beauchamp, you got it right. I started out with Beauchamp, it's Beauchamp, Your Honor.
I studied French too long to see it any other way, but in any event, putting to one side, I guess this is a matter of public record, but has there been any further communication to any of your clients from the city with respect?
Oh, yes. They have
sent out. Instituted condemnation proceedings?
They have not made their they have to start, Your Honor, by an offer letter, if you'll recall. That's required under the statute. What they are doing now is they've sent appraisers out, surveyors. I've spoken with Ms. Beauchamp. They're waiting for those to come back. The city corporation council must sign off on those documents, and then they will submit the first offer letters.
Okay. And I wonder if you could answer, this is kind of a hypothetical question, but not very hypothetical in the end. Dictate to me the injunction that you want.
I was thinking about that last night, Your Honor, that I would seek an injunction which would enjoin the city officials from pursuing to eliminate our clients as business people in the TIF area and just stop it.
All right, so how can a federal court tell an entity like the City of Chicago that has the power of eminent domain that for a certain set of parcels, it's no longer entitled to exercise that fundamental governmental power?
Well, unless Your Honor is thinking of some legal reason why federal court has no jurisdiction.
There are federalism consequences of huge proportions were we to start telling the City of Chicago or the State of Illinois or anybody else We have singled out certain parcels that we are telling you may not exercise this power with respect to, when you bear in mind that at the end of the day, one is entitled to just compensation, that is to say, the fair market value of property. I just have trouble imagining how can we as a federal court tell the city that it, doesn't have this power.
But doesn't the federal court enters injunctions with regard to police activities, which are considered violative of the Constitution? We see injunctions being entered as to police profiling, etc.
But those are different from telling the city that for some indefinite period of time, I don't know how long, you are not going to have the power of eminent domain. It'd be like saying to the Illinois General Assembly, we've decided to remove the power to tax from you.
But doesn't
we can't do that. We can focus certain things. That's why I'm trying to find out if there's any more focused injunction that you have in mind.
Well, but Your Honor, take it. Your question poses a very broad concept. We are speaking in the terms of a limited geographical area, a limited ordinance, which defines what the city wants to do, and that otherwise the Constitution is for naught. What if it was clear as you can see from the plaintiffs here, we have a very racially mixed group, ranging from white owners to Indian, to people from Cambodia, to people from Eastern Europe, and that they simply singled out the people of Indian extraction.
If that had been your complaint, that might be different. But you seem to be saying that motels is the category that your equal protection complaint is based on.
It happens to be that we are the victims of a discriminatory plan.
Discrimination based on national origin or race?
No, it isn't, Your Honor.
Well, that's what the question is, and I think that there's a huge difference.
Well, is there, Your Honor? Look at the Shake case, which the court... why should it be different? The court has said in OLEC, the Supreme Court, any type of government action which has no basis in reason, which discriminates against a class of people, simply because we are business people, we are licensed to do business, we have rights under the Constitution, to say that the city, based on the whim of an alderman, which must be accepted for purposes of motion to dismiss it, that I don't like motels, I don't like these 11 motels in my ward, I am going to use the TIF as a means of driving these people out of my ward.
Is this a taking or some kind of a condemnation for a private purpose?
It ultimately will be for a private purpose. That's another issue, Your Honor, but they are
you
going to transfer
it,
these properties.
I don't see that.
Pardon?
I don't see where you want to keep away from those kinds
of things.
Well,
but those are the things, of course, at this point, we don't want to fall into the category of a land use decision, which this court, as well as the Supreme Court, has said will not be reviewable under due process. We've come in of what's on the face of the ordinance, that we have alleged that you are discriminating, violating our equal protection rights by singling us out for being driven out of business when there are all these other businesses. And remember, we've put in proof, we've put in expert testimony in opposition to these motions that there is no reason to treat us differently. Why are we being treated differently? And we've alleged animus. We come right in with regard to Forsyth's decision. How far are we away from that we are the classic equal protection case, Your Honor? Whether it's a land use decision, whether condemnation is decision, why are we being singled out? Isn't that the question?
Well, I guess it is. If there's other people are being also, aren't there other landowners who are having their land?
Your Honor. That's the whole point of the case.
And you have an inverse condemnation.
But those are supplemental actions, which the court will, if hopefully Your Honors will reverse and say that this is ripe for disposition, which is the issue before the court. The city has never taken a position that we don't have equal protection rights. Their right now is that we can't, our only remedy is in the state court. But no one else has been singled out, Your Honor. That's the whole purpose of the case. We have 200 separate properties in this mile and a half division. The ordinance and the conduct of the city has singled out only the motel owners, and we've alleged that this was is with animus. We can trace the animus, and that it's unreasoned animus. We've put in expert testimony in our affidavits that there is no rational reason to single out these motels. To me, under the OLED place, this is the classic equal protection. Equal protection is not based on invidious racial discrimination. We may have a higher burden because we don't come in within a protected class, but the Equal Protection Clause applies to everybody. I don't think there's any dispute about that, and no one has ever taken that position. And to go back to your question, Judge Wood, the relief here would be discreet and simple. As long as you are only singling out these motels, then it is improper for you to push them out of business. I don't see your question, I realize, is hypothetical, but you're talking about keeping the city from engaging in eminent domain. We're saying we're keeping the city from violating the equal protection rights of a discrete group of people in a discrete area.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Ms. Lee.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, I would like to take a step back because no matter what the merits of this case may be, if this Court lacks jurisdiction to hear the case, then the question of whether or not plaintiffs have an equal protection claim is irrelevant. I would like to focus on the Court's standing this morning. And plaintiffs do not dispute that to have standing, they must allege either an actual or an imminent injury to themselves in order to bring this claim in federal court. And so they've come forward with two distinct injuries. First, they allege that the loss of their property is impending. And second, they allege that they are currently suffering economic harm simply by virtue of being placed on a list that authorizes the city to condemn their property at some future point. But with respect to the first injury, it's not impending. And the second injury, upon closer inspection, is no injury at all. So with respect to their claim that they will lose their property in a future condemnation action, for that to be the case, they would have to allege that the actual loss of their property is impending. But as the only thing they've alleged or been able to allege is that the filing of the condemnation action is impending. But it's not the filing of the action that will cause them harm. It's only the actual loss of their property that will cause them harm.
But, if the city of Chicago, and I'm certainly not implying that it would do this, but this is just for the sake of illustration, decided that it wanted to have a policy of ethnically homogenous neighborhoods, and so it went around condemning the land of whoever the outliers were in a particular neighborhood, you know, the African Americans in one neighborhood, and they bulldoze the buildings and make parks out of their property, and the Caucasians in another neighborhood. Getting just compensation doesn't really get to the essence of that kind of violation, and surely you would not argue in that case that the homeowners whose property was being condemned just had to sit tight and wait to see what kind of money the court gave them.
That is correct, Your Honor. In that situation, a plaintiff would have standing simply by virtue of being singled out on the basis of a disfavored class, a race, or some other suspect class.
Right. But actually, that's where I think Mr. Chapman is saying, if you look at OLEC, it's certainly true that the nature of the class that you're alleging has a lot to do with the level of scrutiny given to the city's actions. And in my hypothetical, plainly, if it were racial, it would be very strict scrutiny that we're given, and maybe if it's a mere economic interest, it's the softest of rational basis scrutiny. But nonetheless, if you can show that there's a classification, there is in fact a present equal protection issue, maybe a really easy one to resolve, maybe not, but there is in fact something going on.
Well, to respond to your question, Your Honor, I would suggest that there is no stigma to being a motel owner. There is no the reason that a suspect class is a suspect class is because, as the Supreme Court has recognized, being singled out on the basis of your race conveys that you are less worthy as a person.
Now, let's just assume, though, this is a motel classification, either motel owners versus every other kind of property owner. That's the distinction the city's made, let's say, okay?
Okay.
That's still a distinction.
Well, it is a distinction, but that's why I say there's no stigma that attaches to being singled out as a motel owner. That's different. That you can differentiate the stigma that's attached to being singled out because of who you are.
And it may be that you win anyway, hands down, because it's a rational basis test to distinguish between motel owners and every other owner. But the fact of the matter is there's still a distinction there. Why don't they have an equal protection claim that should have been probably Rule 56, if not 12b-6, out on an equal protect, because it's governed by a rational basis?
Well, why
the sledgehammer approach of constitutional jurisdiction?
Sorry, Your Honor. They still need to allege an injury from the city's action. And the best they can do is allege that the eminent domain action is impending. But because they've also alleged that they have what is a meritorious equal protection challenge, the loss of their property is not certainly impending, because were they to bring that equal protection defense in a condemnation action, the state court would be bound to recognize it, because as this court has recognized time and again, a state court is just as bound to uphold the federal constitution as the federal court.
But that was the point I was making in the racial point, and as Judge Ripple says, classifications are classifications, whether they're assessed strictly or whether they're assessed merely for rational basis. And there's no rule that you've got to exhaust all state remedies in ordinary 1983 cases. If you're not a prisoner, if you're not in some special categories, and if they're willing to say, we'll just take whatever damages that are not related to the condemnation for this classification, if it indeed cannot be shown to have a rational basis, then maybe they have something. On the other hand, I don't know about, I mean, you also argued redressability, which is why I asked Mr. Chapman about what the injunction would look like.
Well, to respond to your question, Your Honor, again, without an injury by virtue of the classification, they don't have standing. And they admit that they have to allege either an actual injury or they have to allege a future injury that's certainly
impending.
What if
they tried to sell their motel today?
The plaintiffs are absolutely capable of selling their motels today.
The city of Chicago has this contemplated action, whatever you want to call it, affect the value of that motel?
No, Your Honor, and that was the other injury that they alleged. They alleged that their property values are decreased, and that's an actual injury to them today. But that injury is actually no injury at all, because the state court is bound to award just compensation to them in a future eminent domain action. As this court recognized in SGB Financial Services, a buyer today should be willing to pay full fair market value to purchase the property from the motel owners, because the state court, the buyer can be assured that in the state court proceeding.
That's wonderful textbook economics. But is that in the real world, is that what happens? If you were about to go out and buy a house, and you see a plat of future development of that county, and there's this little dotted line through it that shows where that thruway is going through in 15 years, does that affect the value of your property?
Well, it doesn't affect the value of your property, but it may affect a particular buyer's willingness to purchase today, but it certainly doesn't prevent the sale of your property. A particular buyer may, for non-economic reasons, decide they don't want to have the hassle of moving to a property that's going to be condemned next week. But that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be a buyer who would be willing to invest the economic proceeds for the potential upside.
With the risk that someday his property is condemned, the state will take care of him anyway, right?
Well, the only way that the buyer who doesn't have those other sort of concerns about not wanting to uproot themselves would not be willing to pay fair market value today is if the buyer knew that the state court would not award fair market value tomorrow.
He discounted the risk. there's a contingency. The state court might do him justice, and it might not do him justice. But he's taking a risk. He's going to incur, he may not, that he would not have if that little dotted line wasn't on the map.
Well, we...
He's going to discount that in his offer price.
Well, it's our position that there is no risk that the state court will not follow the law. The state court is bound to uphold the United States Constitution, which requires payment of just compensation, and the Illinois Constitution requires the same. So it's our position that there is no risk to that buyer today, because the buyer can be assured that the state court will uphold the law. And plaintiffs certainly have not alleged that the state court will not uphold the law. So without any current economic harm flowing from just being threatened with eminent domain, and without any...
And I take it the city has not, in fact, gone beyond this letter in the reply brief. Do you happen to know?
What I know, the information I have is that with respect to two of the motels, the city has made the decision to acquire them, but that there's a number of steps that have to take place before the actual condemnation even gets filed, much less if they have meritorious claims in their equal protection argument, that will prevent the state court from actually going through with allowing the taking of their property. But what I know is that two of the motels the city has decided to acquire and is seeking appraisals for those properties. With respect to the other nine, the city has not yet made the decision to acquire them. It hasn't found developers for the properties. And so at this point, we don't know if and when that will come to pass.
This whole ordinance, does it have an expiration date?
It does, Your Honor. My understanding is that it was 4 years from the date that it was implemented, which I believe is November 3rd, 1999.
So it started on Monday.
But I believe it's my understanding that the city can reauthorize the ordinance, in essence.
And has it? Has it?
To my knowledge, it has not yet, but I don't know the answer to that question.
You're going
to
keep us informed as to what the city...
I will be happy to keep... Yes, I will be happy to keep you informed. I see my time is...
I have a question, if I may. You just mentioned this, that they haven't found developers yet, therefore those others aren't up for condemnation, which implies to me that this is a condemnation for private development. But that's not... My question goes back to what the others were asking, and that is, suppose these motel owners, this is a business they know, and they know how to make money there. If they were to go to sell this property outright, maybe they'd get some money, but they'd be out of a job and out of a business. As you know, in a condemnation procedure, you have not only the market approach, but also the income approach. Maybe they know how to make money in these businesses. Wouldn't they then have a claim as a motel owner to say, they're putting me out of the one business I know, and I can make a go of this, and they're not putting other people out of business that know how to run this a business?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the motel owners are perfectly capable of reopening a motel business in another location.
No, they're not. They don't have a motel.
Well, they can certainly go and purchase property in another location in order to allow them to pursue...
And then build a motel.
To build a motel. But the relevant inquiry is whether they've suffered an injury today that will allow
them... The injury is that he's going to lose his job, a business he knows how to operate, in a place he knows how to make money.
The plaintiffs have not alleged that as the injury. The only injuries they've alleged are the current harm from the threat that the city will condemn their property and that they will lose their property itself. But the loss of their property can't be impending if their defense is meritorious, as they say, because the state court is bound to uphold the federal law. What they're trying to do here is bring as an affirmative matter what is a federal defense to a state court condemnation proceeding, and as this court has recognized, the state court is the appropriate venue to raise your constitutional challenge to a condemnation action. And for these, unless there are further questions, I would ask for these reasons and the reasons that we express in our brief, we ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Layton. We took a little bit more time with counsel for the appellee, so we'll give you 1 minute, sir.
Very briefly, 1 minute, is that we want to be in business. That is our business, and that we have a right to stay in business and not be put out of business by an unconstitutional ordinance. I would call Your Honor's attention, Judge Wood's opinion in McCullough versus Gatters. That was the same argument where the city, in that case, not this city, said, well, look at where we've done wrongful police conduct, you can file a malicious prosecution case in the state court. And Judge Wood, I believe Judge Mannion was on the same opinion. It came down on the 23rd. We cited in our motion to advance this was a Fourth Amendment violation, and nothing in the Constitution, the Supreme Court, or the decisions of this court said that the plaintiff was precluded from filing a 1983 Fourth Amendment action because there was a state remedy under malicious prosecution. The case is that's exactly what Forth has said. Simply because there are state remedies, if you can do a separate action, equal protection. Now, Your Honor, to close on this note, this is hurting us. Every day I've got to be following what the city is going to do. How do you run a business if you may be out of business tomorrow? How do you keep your employees? We had put in our briefs that this is hurting us very badly.
Chapman, I think we do have a point. You will be following the next couple of days.
Oh, yes.
And you will tell us what happens.
No, it's very much on our minds.
With respect to the
right.
Continued viability of this ordinance.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Chapman. Thank you, Ms. Layton. The case will be taken under advisement.